This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Youthful Energy, providing you with a unique energy support of pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause. Age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years. With a 45-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158, 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. We thank you for the many questions you're sending to us. And what's coming up next, Layla?
Okay, we've got an email from Lori. My grandson is 18 months, and the prescribed multivitamins he's given in his milk has fluoride and many chemicals such as polysorbate 80. Mm-hmm. Do you have a recommendation of a more natural brand of vitamins for about, you know, a 2-year-old, 18 months, 2 years old? And do they need fluoride supplements? Is fluoride not in the water?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it just makes my blood boil that a prescription supplement is going to contain all these unwanted chemicals. Polysorbate 80 has documented negative effects on the microbiome. Mm. That's the last thing you want to administer to a child in the developmental phase, because the integrity of their microbiome is, you know, really going to be important for their ultimate well-being. The other thing about fluoride is that fluoride, while having some bone-enhancing ability and some tooth-enhancing ability, also, you know, maybe a neurotoxin. It certainly can disrupt the microbiome because it has antimicrobial effects that we don't need. So, you know, some drug company is making this, and it's being prescribed by doctors, pediatricians.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you really don't want that. You know, when it comes to fluoride, you know, we do get a fair amount of fluoride from water's fluoridated. In a lot of beverages contain water that's fluoridated. You know, even some of the spring waters are fluoridated.
Yeah.
Because basically they take water from a municipal water supply
and put it in bottles.
Yeah. And then, you know, with pictures of glaciers or, you know, frosty, you know, snow-capped mountaintops, you know, and with attractive names. You know, bottled by companies like Coca-Cola and Pepsi and, you know, major beverage manufacturers.
Mm-hmm. Parent companies of those bottled water, you know, oh, I drink bottled water, not tap water. No, you are drinking tap water.
Yeah. And with a little bit of plastic thrown in from the plastic, you know, containers, you know, especially if they, you know, if you think that they're pristine, I mean, you know, just walk down the street and look at the pallets of these things being delivered to supermarkets, you know, and the temperature is 105, and you know that some
and
of
they're
that
left
plastic,
out in the sun,
and they left, and some of that plastic goes into, or you know, or if you keep a bottle, you know, maybe you throw one in the car. Well, you know, you walk away from your car, and you know, come back, and your car is 115 degrees inside. You know, you pull down the windows, and you turn on the air conditioner. Okay, but that bottle has leached some plastic into it, into the water. Yes, fluoride is already ubiquitous. A lot of countries are cutting back on fluoridation as a public policy because they know that there are downsides. The dentists love fluoride because they think it strengthens teeth, but there have been a lot of developments that have enhanced kids' teeth and reduced cavities in spite of fluoride. There's a lot of fluoridated toothpastes. I mean, if you choose to give your child a fluoridated toothpaste to strengthen their teeth, fine, but there are other options so that you don't get the fluoride. I think the best way to prevent dental decay in kids is not to feed them sugar. I mean, think how much sugar kids get. You know, I was, you know, there's a family member who's 2 years old, And, we were watching Elmo, and and who appears but the Cookie Monster? The Cookie Monster. And the Cookie Monster is devouring cookies. Now, what's interesting about this two-year-old is because she's in my household, she doesn't even know what a cookie is. She knows what the Cookie Monster is. She knows that the Cookie Monster is consuming something, but it's something that she's never had. You know? So I think her teeth are safeguarded. Also, she's had no fluoride. And her teeth are fine. They're coming in fine. So, we see so many dental cavities in the primary teeth of kids. You know, that's really sad. It's not even their permanent teeth. That's a problem. So what do kids need? I mean, I don't think kids need a multivitamin, really, if they're eating a good diet.
I used to take Flintstones, but not at 18 months.
Yeah, but not even, all that other stuff, I don't think kids need if they have a good diet. But what two things they need, in my opinion, three things. Of course, vitamin D. I think I would give them vitamin D drops, at that age. Mm-hmm. And you can get vitamin D drops that are clean. And you can also, without polysorbate 80, what else would a kid need, in a supplementary fashion? Probably EPA or DHA, especially DHA-rich, something like Core Omega, which delivers that.
Oh, Core Omega is great, and kids love it.
Kids love it.
It's like an orange-flavored pudding.
Yeah, and it's made with natural ingredients, and it can boost their EPA levels. But, I was reading an interesting study out of, it's in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition this month. 8 and 9-year-olds in Denmark were, for only 12 weeks, it was a 12-week study, because they can't get, it's hard to do a study for much longer than that, especially with kids. So they gave him either chicken or oily fish, 300 grams of either for 12 weeks. So per week. So 300 grams is about 3/4 of a pound. So it means several servings of oily fish. Now, it didn't mean that the kids had to eat, herring or mackerel, fillets. In Denmark, they have mackerel sausages that are, a way to get that in.
And that sounds delicious. There's a such thing as mackerel sausage?
Yeah.
Fish
sausages. And, they can be made with nice natural spices. And But also they had salmon. So they had 300 grams of that per week for 12 weeks. And then they tested them for their cognitive abilities and what's called their socio-emotive characteristics. Now, you can only imagine what socio-emotive characteristics are for an 8 or 9-year-old. do they tantrum? Do they tear up their room? Do they have serious disciplinary problems? So they rated them. And what they found is there were significant differences with just 12 weeks intervention with omega-3 rich fish. So, I recall my own childhood. And I'm pretty sure that if I were a child today, I would be medicated because I was really antsy. I was not the true ringleader in terms of class disruption, but I really played along, and I was moody. I had sleep problems. And I ate no fish. And I wondered in retrospect if I'd had, my parents fed me very well, but I was finicky. And so they acceded to my, preferences and, I found fish icky and I didn't eat fish.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a texture thing for so many kids. Well, I would bet most of us would be medicated. If you really look at that, that would be such an interesting study.
Yeah.
What kind of behavior characteristics? It was just chalk it up to being a kid.
Yeah, exactly.
How about just being a kid?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they're not always going to behave.
Yeah. But, didn't translate into learning problems. It was more behavioral problems.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's the recourse for obstreperous kids. He's being disruptive. Let's do something. to calm him down. And, I just was antsy, you know, but who knows? You know, it just may be the lot of...
You could have been bored. You were probably just bored.
Bored smart kids. It's like, you know, I'd go to class and be like, well, not again. Let's just get on with it. You know, it's like, all right, I know this already. It's like...
You were one of the brighter pupils, no doubt.
I guess. What can I tell you? You know, so anyway...
An 18-month-old, definitely not a prescription multivitamin that's got fluoride and other things like polysorbate 80. There are better options out there.
D,
there are vitamins for kids.
Core Omega, which is on full script, by the way, and maybe a probiotic, but not necessarily a probiotic, because if you can give small amounts of fermented foods to kids, you know, live yogurt or... But, you know, kids do well with bifidobacteria sometimes, especially if they have digestive problems. That could be a good supplement for children. Not all kids, I don't think, absolutely need a probiotic. It's nice if a kid is C-section to get some probiotics, because then they're not going to get the normal seeding from the birth canal of the vaginal flora for mom, which is important. Mm-hmm. And they may have more problems as a result of C-sectioning. But, you know, you just sort of analyze the, you know, quality of the kid's bowel movements, if they're very constipated, if they have, you know, very loose bowel movements, and you might add a probiotic to address that.
Right. The bifidobacterium especially is good for the large bowel, which is, Lori, thank you for that question.
Yep.
Okay. Let's see here. We've got one from Sylvia. I take magnesium taurate for AFib and magnesium citrate for constipation. Can you take much magnesium?
That's a good combo because what we find is that the magnesium taurate is more absorbed and has more of an antiarrhythmic effect. The magnesium citrate is not that well absorbed, but precisely because of that, it acts as a laxative.
Yes, draws more water to the bowel.
Right. Now,
kind of hangs out there, draws water, and washes out. Yeah.
It's very hard to OD on magnesium if you have normal kidney function.
Yeah.
If you have impaired kidney function, and I don't mean just a creatinine of 1.3 or 1.4, but if you have a creatinine of like 2.5, you could overdose on magnesium, and that could actually
have... talking about kidney disease now, right.
And that can have effects on your heart, which could be dangerous. But it's hard for normal walking around individuals to overdose on magnesium because the body has an escape valve, which is, it's a laxative. And if you take too much, you know, you're going to have loose bowel movements. You'll excrete the magnesium. So, you know, I've never encountered that as a problem in my entire career of overdosing on magnesium in patients.
I've not seen that either.
And, you know, really haven't. Sometimes people say, well, I tried the magnesium citrate. You know, I took two and it doesn't help. It's like, okay.
Oh, you might need six.
Yes.
You know,
Yes. You have to titrate it. And be careful. Don't try this, you know, Monday morning, you know, as you go off on your hour and a half commute.
Right.
You know, you can try it on a weekend where you're close to the throne, you know, because you want to see what the result is. You know?
Right. You'll know you've had too much if you have diarrhea. And listen, everybody finds their happy dose of magnesium citrate for constipation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my favorite thing for constipation really can work very well. For people for whom it doesn't work, it really suggests they have a serious motility problem. And, you know, for those people, it's really hard to help them. There are newer medications that may enhance that, but they don't work that well. I think the future of that is for people who have really serious problems with motility and peristalsis, is there's going to be electronic pacemakers that are designed to, you know, actually pace the bowel much as you pace the heart, you know, and they just have not, I mean, they've done a much better job with the heart, which seems like a more complex organ than the bowel, but the bowel's, you know, I guess... has
pretty
much
complex.
More, very, very, a lot of nerves in the bowel. And so they have to come up with a very smart pacemaker that can, It's going to have to gather information from the nerve plexus in the intestines and analyze it using artificial intelligence and machine learning to learn what works for you. Like learn, you know, like Siri learns your speech pattern. These new devices may learn your electrical pattern in your bowel to replicate normal transit. Which is just so subtle and complex.
Now, we're talking about people, if they have motility issues, it's not a matter of, the magnesium alone won't help, but neither will taking a probiotic or a prebiotic or heroic amounts of fiber.
Fiber, no. Because
if it's a true motility issue.
And you know, often constipation can be alleviated by fiber, and there's a lot of fiber products, you know, Benefiber and things like that. That just stuffs people up who have motility problems. Unfortunately, those are sometimes the people who make their way to us, and sometimes we can help them, and sometimes it involves referral to a motility specialist at an academic institution. Those are the toughest patients.
Yeah. Now, as far as the magnesium taurate for AFib, Sylvia's taking the right magnesium for that.
Right.
For AFib. We're seeing more and more AFib, but that comes down to so many lifestyle issues. Maybe that's why we're seeing more AFib, the way we're seeing more obesity, diabetes, metabolic syndrome, all of that.
Right. And there's some information that you know, atrial fibrillation can be related to polyphenols in the diet, that they may have a protective effect, things like EGCG, green tea, you know, that they may slow the progression towards that. Some people are genetically predisposed to atrial fibrillation. It's sort of like their electrical system breaks down after a time.
Yeah. All right. Sylvia, thank you for that email. Take your magnesium, both forms. Okay. Oh, we've got a very interesting email from Jean. She sent along this link to this article that she thought we might find interesting. Supplements with potential to prevent Alzheimer's affect blood, but less so the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So they're talking about population studies that support the preventive potential of omega-3 fatty acids, you know, the good fats found in fish. But they're wondering if the amount in the blood is the same as the amount that's actually impacting the brain.
And so, this is about the blood-brain barrier, is that, and this is actually a problem with a lot of medications, is that certain medications that are designed for the brain, they don't traverse the blood-brain barrier very well. Same thing with supplements, I guess.
Yeah. So what they did was, besides just getting a blood level, they also checked cerebrospinal fluid, and that requires a
lumbar
spinal
puncture.
Tap.
Yeah. Ooh.
So
how much did they get for participating in that research? I hope a lot.
I hope so too. My God.
Do you want to, hey, how much would you charge for a spinal tap? I think I'd rather not get one. Yeah.
Everybody's going to find their number though. Anyway, so the researchers found that at the end of 6 months, participants who took omega-3 supplements had 200% more DHA in their blood compared to those who took placebos. Okay, granted. But in contrast,
That's good.
The DHA found in cerebrospinal fluid was only 28% higher in the treatment group than in the control group.
Now we're talking, wait, say it again. So you're saying if you don't have ApoE4,
we didn't even get to the ApoE4 yet,
okay.
Dr. Hoffman.
Okay.
This is just in those who took
Wait, so hang tight.
Just
repeat. So you're saying in the blood it comes up nicely, but in the cerebrospinal fluid it doesn't come up very well.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was only 28% higher.
Right.
In the cerebrospinal fluid.
Got
That's the point they're making.
Okay.
Less so in the cerebrospinal fluid than in the blood.
Okay.
And then they found that those with the risk inflating ApoE4 mutation. What they found is that the ApoE4 carriers, despite having the same dose of DHA, had less omega-3s in the brain. And so this is what they're finding out. So if you've got that gene mutation, is it's not getting absorbed into the brain as efficiently.
So it gets absorbed a little bit, but not as well.
Bit, but not as well. Much if you've okay. got that APOE4 mutation.
Okay.
But nevertheless, it's only 28% higher mm-hmm. In those without APOE4, I mean, to boot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just a matter of checking the serum. It might also be a matter of checking how much is actually getting into the brain.
Right.
And this is very interesting.
Well, this is one of the things we see with a couple of nutrients that we also use for the brain. We use magnesium, and we like to use what's called protosorb magnesium, which is magnesium 3-8, which is said to cross the blood-brain mm-hmm. barrier more effectively than the aforementioned magnesium taurate or magnesium citrate. Magnesium citrate, probably negligible effect on the brain. And another one is curcumin, which we know is good for the brain, but the question is crossing the blood-brain barrier. There is a product we like to use called Cogumin, which is a form of
curcumin that is more amenable to crossing that blood-brain barrier.
And again, you know, research is in its fairly early phases to identify these you know, agents that traverse the blood-brain barrier or carriers, vehicles mm-hmm. to allow nutrients to penetrate more easily. I think that's a great area for research for both medications and supplements to allow active agents to get to where they need to do their job in the brain. But it's also it kind of highlights what APOE4 is responsible for. I think APOE4 is destructive to the brain in a variety of ways. But this may be yet another way in which APOE4 compromises brain function, because it either dictates a higher requirement for DHA, so it gets used up more, or B, makes it less available to the brain. The implication is not to just don't bother with DHA if you have APOE4.
No.
It might be.
And we want to note, in this study, it was a 2-gram dose DHA. And that's not a whole lot.
Yeah. Well, 2,000 milligrams, you know, even some of the more potent EPA DHA formulas may have 500 mm-hmm. per capsule, you know, so you'd have to take a lot of capsules to get past that, you know, and maybe you can push, you know, by mass effect, you know, just with an onslaught of DHA, overcome that barrier.
Yeah.
Interesting research. Yeah.
Yeah. Gene, thank you for that. Thank you for sending us that. Okay. We've got an email from Valerie. Hello, Dr. Hoffman. I'm currently on the Whole30/Paleo diet.
Like it.
Yeah, and I've been doing that because I have severe acne. And now my dermatologist is recommending Accutane.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried different regimens, but it's really progressed since March of this year. Hey, is there COVID-related acne? March mm-hmm. of this year. That's interesting.
I kind of doubt that that's acne is a manifestation of COVID-19. But you know, I think this person's on the right track, and it may take some time before this person optimizes. You know, I did get a call. This sounds similar to a question that I got over the weekend, a live call. And you know what I often do on calls is I say, well, you know, give us just some basic information. It's not going to be like a doctor's visit, but just, you know, what, if you don't mind sharing, what's your height and weight? And the person said, I'm 4'11 and I weigh 200 pounds or 200 something pounds. And I said, well, you know, if you're carrying excess body fat, that can have a metabolic effect and can change, you know, your, basically
acne,
your biochemistry.
Is inflammatory.
It's inflammatory. The fat is inflammatory. You know, it may also alter your hormones. There may be a PCOS angle to this because, you know, short women with, you know, excess body weight may have hormonal abnormalities. A very low carb diet is ideal for that.
Right. Valerie mentions, although she doesn't tell us her height or weight, she says, the acne I've had in the majority of my teens and 20s was menstruation related.
Oh, okay.
But what she really wants from you, Dr. Hoffman, is what do you think about taking Accutane, or would you recommend something else?
I think it's a risk-benefit equation. It's a lousy drug. It can have a lot of side effects. But, you know, acne can be devastating socially and professionally.
Yes.
And, you know, if you've tried everything else, you know, you might have to pull the trigger on it. I would hate to see that have to happen.
Right.
You know, you may want to see if a very stringent low-carb diet over 6 months or a year, if you can wait that long, has a beneficial effect on the acne.
And there are certain things to also eliminate from the diet on a low-carb diet, like dairy. Dairy clogs the pores.
Sure. Yeah, no, that would be, kind of goes without saying, on a Whole 30 or paleo diet, I presume that that was already inactive.
Dairy-free.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
True, yes.
Yeah.
Addition of things like olive leaf extract. If you're currently taking B vitamins, Valerie, stop. Because sometimes in this kind of a situation, the B vitamins may exacerbate a little bit.
And this is something you taught me, is that for some people, fish oil can be counterproductive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, fish oil generally good and generally well-tolerated in acne. But if for some people it can be counterproductive, the oil to take would be GLA. GLA is hydrating to the skin and can be helpful, less likely to cause problems if you're suffering from acne.
Borage oil.
And, of course, you know, zinc and, you know, vitamin A, adequate amounts. Even vitamin D has been shown to be helpful.
And, you know, let's remind everybody what Accutane is. It's a super-duper mega-ginormous dose of vitamin A.
Yeah. Which has to be monitored very carefully. And it has all the side effects of, you know, taking, say, you know, 500,000 international units of vitamin A. You know, you can get, you know, very strong vitamin A, and you can take vitamin A on your own, but you could run into severe problems, you know, pseudotumor cerebri with terrible headaches, you know, flaky skin, you know, just problems can occur with vitamin A. Liver problems can occur with vitamin A.
Yeah,
very so hard don't, on the liver. I don't anymore megadose people with vitamin A, because that's a little bit like, you know, prescribing Accutane. You know, it's not, there's no advantages, and there's all the downsides potentially. By the way, Accutane is associated with a higher risk of ulcerative colitis. We've discovered too.
So inflammatory bowel disease.
All right. You know, surprisingly, this is all the time that we have for today's Intelligent Medicine. Time flies when we're having fun. You know, our favorite part of the week, an opportunity to share answers with you about some of your more pressing questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. We'll be around all summer because there's no place to go. And so we'll circle back next week with more answers. Thank you, Layla, for joining us. Stay safe.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.